Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. So I normally forget to tell you about this, so let me make sure I get this up front. There is going to be no episodes tomorrow or Friday. I'm finally going in and getting a corrective eye surgery, LASIK plus eye surgery. I've been dealing with contacts and glasses for so long, for so much of my life, and it's just been an annoying hassle. Glasses give me headaches, contacts are constantly slipping out of place. So yes, I'm having elective procedure done in order to correct my vision, in order to no longer have to deal with the hassle. But it also means there's going to be a little bit of a recovery time. And so based off of, you know, when the surgery is going to be tomorrow, there's not going to be an episode. And then Friday is going to be a lot of my recovery time in order to make sure everything heals just right. And as far as today goes, I'm still dealing with having to wear glasses, you know, and I had always been a contact person, which means, you know, I got a little bit of a headache going on just because my glasses, the prescription might not be right because, well, I almost never wear them. Plus, I'm dealing with the fact that my line of sight, my vision, my frames might be a little bit too small for my eyes. So there's a lot of blurry areas. And so I can't just hold things the way I used to. I have to try and figure out different ways to look at them in order to make sure that it's in my sight of vision. All of that, if you've never had to deal with glasses or contacts or anything, you may not understand about the desire for corrective surgery or what a complete pain in the butt corrective lenses are. And I'm looking to eliminate all that. Okay, so now that you know there's going to be no episode tomorrow or Friday, let's go ahead and get into this episode today, which I'm going to work on keeping pretty short. Okay, with that in mind, the first two articles that I want to get to today is just kind of fun and lighthearted and, well, why not? So the first article from Just the News is China hunting for UFOs. Beijing mum amid report about Army Task Force. So this is one of those things where apparently the United States and the world is now going UFO crazy, trying to figure out, is this really aliens? You know, and it seems like there's a lot of hope that it is aliens for some reason. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether I would prefer this to be technology from a foreign adversary or aliens. I don't know what would be worst case scenario here. But in this report, it goes on and says that the interest, because people are now calling up China's embassy, asking them about, you know, these UFOs, UAPs, and trying to figure out whether it's theirs or aliens. Now, let's actually take a moment to think about that. You call up the Chinese embassy and go, hey, do you have some technology that surpasses ours by about 100 years to 1,000 years? You expect them to answer honestly here? But okay, let's say we take China at its word. Right? So what would the report be? Well, there was a call made to the Chinese embassy asking about the possibility of UFOs and extraterrestrials. The Chinese embassy responds, we have been getting calls about this, said the person who answered the phone at the Chinese embassy in Washington, D.C. The official did not answer, though, whether Beijing maintains a UFO task force. The interest stems from recent articles in the foreign press saying that China has been inundated with UFO reports and that the People's Liberation Army is tracking them via artificial intelligence. The frequent occurrences of unidentified air conditions in recent years brings severe challenge to air defense security to our country, wrote Chen, who noted that the PLA uses artificial intelligence because it can think outside of the box. Many of the UFO reports inside of China are, like those in the United States, traced to natural occurrences or to weather balloons or drones, according to sources cited by the South China Morning Post. All of this is to say, China has its own version of a UAP program trying to figure out what the heck these things are. Now, if these reports are accurate, if they're truthful, if we can claim any type of ability to trust the Chinese government, then we can at least rule out that these are Chinese top secret drones or aircraft technology. I don't know if that makes me feel good or bad, but like I said, that all depends on how much you think that you can trust the Chinese government. I still believe and I still maintain that there is going to be a logical, non extraterrestrial explanations for all of these. And yeah, I get that a lot of people may be hedging their bets, you know, going, well, we want to believe they're UFOs, but we don't want to sound crazy. No, I just do not believe extraterrestrials would find our planet interesting enough to come visit. They would take a look at us and go, yeah, these people are not worth our time. They can't even tell the difference between a man and a woman in certain parts of the world. So I just don't have a belief in extraterrestrials. But for some reason, UFOs have become more dominant in the news as everyone wants to figure this out and is hopeful. I just don't see in our lifetime, at least not in my lifetime, that we'll get the answer or that we will find out extraterrestrials. It's not that I don't believe that there is life on other planets. I'm pretty sure that there is somewhere in the entire galaxy or in the universe in one of the many galaxies that there are. But the ability for them to be able to travel to us and to be willing to make that travel just to come visit us, I just don't think they would. All right, so that would be my opinion on that. Okay, so now let's go ahead to another short story here. This article comes from the Epoch Times, and I'm just going to briefly do the highlights here. And it is about the 2020 election and why a judge is taking a look at granting access to the absentee ballots and wanted to do a full forensic audit. And it has to do with, well, witnesses. What witnesses are saying, the affidavits that they are filling out about how there was a lot of ballots that were in pristine condition on different, you know, paper, you know, how paper has different thickness. You know, you have stock card papers, you have regular paper and all that. So the paper was different. It was in pristine condition with no folds that you would naturally have as part of mailing the ballots out to everybody and having received it back. And the fact that they all look like they were just Xeroxed, right? So what is going on is we have multiple affidavits about people saying, hey, it looks like someone just took a ballot and made a bunch of photocopies of it and then sent that in. And so we have a lot of just Xerox copies of the same ballot, and they were all counted individually. And this amounted to over 10,000 to 20,000 ballots. Right? And it stuck out because they had never encountered this before. The difference in the thickness of the paper, the type of paper used, the Xerox. And so the judge is going through wanting to allow for a forensic audit to be done. Now, the Democrats, they don't like this. And the Never Trump Republicans, they don't like this. Now, they always want to go off and try and say, questioning the legitimacy of the election is an attack on our democracy. Of course, they didn't feel that way when it was them attacking Trump with their bogus Trump-Russia collusion claims. But how is it an attack on our democracy to say, hey, we just want to confirm that the person who is in the White House is legitimate? Of course, we all know that he isn't legitimate because the election was run illegally to begin with. But in any event, we want to go off and say, hey, democracy depends on transparency. You did everything you could in the last election to avoid transparency, to try and do as much counting and much operations in secret as possible, and violated court orders in order to prevent election observers from doing their job. If you actually believe that Joe Biden is legitimate somehow, then you have no fear of a forensic audit. A forensic audit would only set aside any questions to that legitimacy. And democracy involves trust. The Washington Post has that line, democracy dies in darkness, and yet they conducted the election in as much darkness as possible. Maybe there's a connection there. But shouldn't we be working to set aside any doubts of the election? I mean, there is evidence. There is evidence of a lot of shenanigans. So yes, we want to go through. We need a forensic audit, if for no other reason than to just reassure and provide faith in democracy and in the outcome of the election. But of course, the Democrats, they don't care. They're not about free and fair elections. They're authoritarians. Left-wing politics is incompatible with democracy and a free society, because left-wing politics is all about authoritarian big government control over everybody's life. And they'll do anything it takes in order for them to be able to take control of a government. So they have no problems with cheating in elections, violating the Constitution all over the place, violating our rights under the Constitution and usurping power that they don't have, because it's all about their power, their control. And anything that threatens their power or exposes them for what it is they are and what they do must be shut down according to their eyes. And of course, they'll attack Republicans or anybody who tries to bring to light what actually happened, what the truth is. If that truth is damaging to the Democrats, they'll do anything to try and stop them. They'll demonize them. They'll go off and try and block any and all investigations. We've seen them block investigations all over the place when it comes to investigating Democrats. They'll abuse the power of government to target their political opponents. And so all we are saying is, hey, we want to confirm the legitimacy of the election outcome. And all of their actions, all of their behavior goes off and suggests they have something to hide, that they themselves do not have faith in the legitimacy of the election. Okay. I mean, we've covered this all before about the election and everything, but as we are seeing judges who failed to do their job when it mattered the most, now coming out and going, you know, some of this is just too suspicious. Maybe we should actually look into it. It's like, hey, okay, let's say, you know, you finally step up and do your job. You allow the forensic audits. They go through. And then you find out that the election was completely fraudulent and Joe Biden is not legitimate. What do you do at that point? What is the remedy? Are we just going to go, okay, we found out he cheated, but we'll let him have his 4 years and then we'll just make sure that it doesn't happen again? Or is there a remedy to this? It would be a constitutional crisis because they failed to do their jobs to begin with. Because what is the remedy? You think the Democrats are going to go off and impeach Joe Biden and restore President Trump just because they got caught in the biggest scandal in U.S. history? No. They'll go off along with the media and try to dismiss it, try to ignore it, and try and come up with some sort of excuse of, oh, well, too bad. We engaged in the biggest crime ever, but you know what? You can't do anything about it. Ugh. Why they didn't just do their job to begin with, I don't know. Now, meanwhile, Pelosi is going off and trying to push forth the January 6th commission, despite it not going through in the Senate, as well as trying to find a way to ram through their federal takeover of elections, their unconstitutional takeover of elections. Because now they are seeing about what they had to do in order to get Joe Biden installed into the White House. People are not voting for the Democrats, and the level of fraud that they have to engage in, it's just getting ridiculous. It's exposing too much about the Democrats. So what they're trying to do is push through this H.R. 1, S1. You know, they call it For the People Act, I believe is what they're trying to name it. And they're trying to go through and have a federal takeover of the elections. But the Constitution prohibits that. That would be what they are trying to do, violates the Constitution. The Constitution says the state legislatures determine the time, place, and manner in which elections are held and conducted. Where the heck does the federal government think, or the Democrats think, that they can issue from Washington, D.C., hey, you know, you must allow ballot harvesting, we must have mail-in ballots for everybody? What they are doing here, what the Democrats are doing, is just trying to set up a system with no security, no integrity measures whatsoever, in order to be able to hide the fraudulent activity, make it almost impossible to uncover the fraud. It's disgusting. Now, Pelosi says there is an urgent need to pass the election legislation known as H.R. 1. No, there's not. And she says this because of voter suppression effort by the Republicans at the state level. What voter suppression effort? They always go off and they try to make the claim that there is voter suppression effort, but yet they can't provide a single example of voter suppression, at least not any legitimate examples. They make up things that they claim are voter suppression, such as needing ID to vote. But you need ID in order to buy alcohol. You need ID in order to buy cigarettes, to get into sporting events, to attend political events. You know, you need ID to be able to drive. But when it comes to voting, that is somehow suppression. So are you trying to say that requiring a driver's license is suppressing the rights of the people to be able to drive a car, that it's discriminatory, that it's suppressing people's ability to get a vehicle? and drive freely? Huh? I mean, if you're trying to say that it's voter suppression to require an ID, then doesn't that mean that anything that requires an ID would fall under that same suppression measure? But they're not making that argument. They're just trying to claim that it's only suppression when it relates to the election. Now, why is it that Republicans are trying to go off and require voter ID, you know, or to require showing ID in order to vote? Because we want to stamp out fraud. We want to make sure that the person voting is who they say they are, not going around, as has been caught by Project Veritas, people going around assuming the identity of people in different precincts, different voting precincts, and casting votes numerous times under the names of numerous people, people who are on the voting rolls but haven't voted for a few elections. So what do? They assume their identity, assuming that they're not going to vote this time as well. We want to make sure that people are who they say they are. We want to make sure that it's one person, one vote, not one person stealing everybody else's votes. I mean, we even saw that in this election, where people went up to showed up to vote in person and told, no, you can't vote in person. You already voted by mail. We already received a ballot in your name. And yet that person did not vote because their ballot ended up in the hands of somebody else who decided to vote in that in the other person's name. Why are the Democrats so against the idea of one person, one vote? Against the idea of making sure that the people who are voting are who they say they are and that they are citizens with the ability to vote? Because the Democrats want fraud, because they know that we do not vote for them, that we do not support their policy. You know, for Democrats, the idea of one person, one vote and restricting voting to actual citizens, that is the suppression. Not allowing people over in China to vote in our election is basically what the Democrats are trying to claim is voter suppression. They claim that everybody should be able to vote, and if you're a Democrat, you should be able to vote multiple times, regardless of where you live in the world, regardless of whether or not you're a citizen or you're here illegally. They say everybody should vote. No. Only citizens can vote, and that's under the Constitution. It's not that Republicans are engaged in voter suppression, it's that the Democrats are engaged in voter fraud. And ever since Biden was installed in the White House, he does what every authoritarian does in order to try and overthrow democracy, or trying to gear up to overthrow democracy, creates chaos, destabilizing the country. We see that with the crisis at the border. We see that internationally as well. We see that in his economic policies. But he also goes through and attacks the rights of the American people under the Constitution. And the two biggest rights that authoritarians go after first is speech and the right to self-defense. And we've seen how the left has been going off and attacking the free speech and free dissemination of information with all of their censorship efforts. But the Democrats are also very much going after the Second Amendment. And we see this with Biden's ATF is going after gun owners, trying to turn millions of legal guns into illegal guns by reclassifying them. All right, so this comes from The Blaze. Gun rights activists are pledging to fight a new rule proposed by Biden administration that could turn millions of gun owners into potential felons. Ooh, overnight, just a rule change. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives on Monday proposed a new regulation that would define handguns as a short-barreled rifle if it is equipped with a stabilizing pistol brace, a popular gun accessory. As many as 40 million gun owners could be affected by the rule change. When individuals use accessories, they say, to convert pistols into short-barreled rifles, they must comply with the heightened regulation on those dangerous and easily concealable weapons, the Department of Justice said in a statement announcing the new rules. Gun owners in possession with a handgun equipped with a stabilizing brace that meets the ATF's proposed definition of a short-barreled rifle must pay a $200 tax stamp and apply to register the weapon with the agency as a rifle. If they do not wish to do so, then they either need to attach a longer barrel or turn over their weapon. Okay, so there is a few problems with this. A few problems. Now, the first problem and the least biggest hurdle of this is the regulation. So where do they get the idea that in the executive branch, they get to come up with and create new regulations, new laws without the approval of Congress? I mean, I read the Constitution and it says that the legislative branch is the one that determines the laws, the legislative branch. So where does the executive branch get the idea that if they just call it a regulation, they get to write new laws and redefine the legal terminology? Shouldn't that be the legislative branch that goes off and says, here's the laws regarding firearms and guns, and here are the definitions that we are using. These are the legal definitions. So where does the executive branch think that it gets to implement laws that are not passed by the legislative branch? So they're operating outside of their constitutional authority, trying to create these new rules, these new, quote, regulations that are really nothing more than a law. I mean, it goes off and provides, hey, this, we're going to define this as illegal. Here's the enforcement mechanism. Here's the punishment. That's a law. They don't have the authority to write a law in the executive branch. It has to be passed by Congress. Now, the second and even bigger problem here is that this completely violates the Constitution. What part in the Second Amendment that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is so hard for them to understand? Now, they go off and they try to say, well, you know, no right and no amendment of the Constitution is absolute. Really? According to who? According to who? Please explain that. I look at the Constitution. I look through the amendments, especially the first 10 amendments, and it says the government shall not infringe, shall not limit, shall not, you know, impede. You know, what the government shall not do. I don't see anything in there that says afterwards, unless they want to, or unless they feel it's reasonable, or unless the government feels that there's a danger posed by the exercising of your rights. I don't see that anywhere in the Constitution. The exception, you know, I don't see an exceptions clause in the Constitution. I don't see the unless the government feels like it's necessary clause. I see that the government shall not. So when they go off and they talk about gun control laws, where are they getting the authority for gun control laws? Because the Constitution basically tells them they can't regulate or engage in gun control. So where do they go off and figure that they can do this? So here it is. We got two constitutional violations going on here. We got one, the executive branch trying to usurp the legislative authority of the legislative branch to implement new laws all willy-nilly without Congress ever voting on it. And then they are engaged in a constitutional violation with any gun control measure. It is a complete constitutional violation. It's what I had said in an episode earlier this week when they were talking about the judge who at least struck down the unconstitutional gun ban in California, but then said, well, these are, you know, not a weapon of war, machine gun and all that. And it's like, okay, but what if they were a weapon of war? It would still be unconstitutional. The whole point of the Second Amendment is so that we, the people, would have the ability to rise up and defend ourselves from the government should it get out of control and tyrannical. But like all tyrants, they don't care what the Constitution says. They don't care what our rights are. They don't care about what the limits of government are. They violate all of it. They seize power by hook or by crook, and then they attack our right in order to avoid or to prevent us from being able to speak out or defend ourselves. That is the pattern of every tyrant, as well as engaging in actions to destabilize a country for the sole purpose of the eventual overthrow of the democracy and the implementation of the authoritarian government. And the reason why the Democrats are acting so fast and so rash and so crazy right now is they understand that they have a limited window. They understand that with the new voter integrity laws that are coming out in order to try and stop and prevent the fraud that we saw in the 2020 election from being able to happen again, that by all of the laws that are coming out to ensure that the next election is legitimate and does have integrity, the Democrats know that they're not going to be able to maintain control. If they have to operate in a free and fair election, they're going to lose, and they're going to lose big, which means they only have until the end of 2022 to get through everything that they can to try and disrupt and overthrow democracy and to strip us of our rights. And they are wasting no time in trying to do this, which is why they're trying to get rid of the filibuster and trying to unconstitutionally take control of the election. It is unbelievable. Now, what I hope happens is, as a result of these integrity laws that will stamp out all the fraud that we had witnessed in 2020, that the Republican Party manages to get super majorities in the House and the Senate, as well as at the state level, and therefore can override Biden and make and undo everything that he has done, as well as being able to implement new laws and new constitutional amendments to stop the Democrats permanently, to stop their attacks on our country and our democracy permanently. There's a lot of things that I can think of that need to be implemented, which is why I'm thinking about making a run myself for the United States Senate. Of course, that is an ongoing discussion with my wife, you know, because that would also be a lot of commitment of being in Washington, D.C., where she definitely doesn't want to go. And so there's a lot of discussion that is going on right now in my household. But there are a lot of things that I would be going forth and be trying to implement, especially if able to get super majorities in the House and the Senate, in order to safeguard our democracy and ensure its survival for the next 300 years. And the Democrats know what they're doing. They know. I mean, even when you go through and you take a look at the daily propaganda briefing with Jen Psaki, every so often she trips up and admits the truth. A recent admission is that Psaki accidentally admits that Biden and Harris and the Democrats manufactured the crisis at the border, that they created it. You know, when asked the question, her response was, "I will say, we're not taking advice from former President Trump and most of the Republicans who are criticizing us on this, given that they were all sitting there while we created the problem we walked into." So it's like, yeah, we're not going to listen to the Republicans or, you know, consult with them or listen to their criticisms, because they didn't do anything to stop us when we were creating this problem. Isn't that kind of one of those weird things? So because the Republicans didn't come up and say anything more forcefully condemning the Democrats' open border policies or trying to do more to stop illegal immigration, that the Republicans bear responsibility for the crisis the Democrats created because they were silent. And yet the problem is the Republicans weren't silent. We've been talking about illegal immigration for a long time. We've been going off there and talking about the need to secure the border for a long time. Trump was taking very decisive action. He didn't just sit there quietly while the border descended into chaos. He took action, and he handed off the most secure border that we've had in decades, with illegal immigration at its lowest level in decades. And you're trying to say he just sat there quietly while you created the problem, and that somehow not speaking up enough against you while you were creating the problem means that you don't have to listen to the criticism, because the people who didn't speak up enough bear the same responsibility as you who created the problem? What kind of asinine logic is that? It is amazing what they come up with in order to try and avoid, well, any personal responsibility whatsoever. And of course, you know, when you go off and you take a look at the Democrats, one of the things that you have to ask yourself is, why do they hate the country so much? I mean, look at how much they spend on trying to attack the country and going through and, you know, trying to destabilize the country, open borders, you know, attack the economy, attack our rights, attack the Constitution. They hate the country. So it's no wonder that when they are in charge, they attack the country and try to undermine us and try to tank the country. I mean, you now even see it here. Journalists on MSNBC find sight of American flags on trucks just disgusting. I mean, think about that. They hate the country so much that the sight of our country's own flag enrages them, disgusts them, it incites them to want to attack the country even more. Our American flag, red, white, and blue, American flag. And they hate it because they hate the country, which is why they spend every moment of every day, everywhere they hold power, attacking the country. How can the American flag be a disturbing sign to you? The sight of the American flag enrages you. My God, these people. I mean, you can't expect to put people into power who hate the country and expect a positive result, which is why it's always a dumpster fire everywhere Democrats have control. And since Biden and the Democrats have seized power, our country has been under attack, especially by cyber criminals who know that Biden and the Democrats are weak, that Biden and the Democrats hating the country as much as they do, won't do anything, won't retaliate against attacks on this country. They didn't dare test Trump when Trump was in office because they knew Trump loved the country and would respond and defend the country. But because they know the Democrats hate the country, they can attack us without repercussions, which is why we see articles like this from the Red State. Ransomware attacks now targeting Congress while Biden is still not putting the blame on Russia. So, you know, it's one of those amazing things how when Trump was in office, everyone was going, Russia, 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 evil, Russia collusion, Russia, Russia, Russia. Now that Biden's in office, it's, oh, you know, we don't need to worry about the Russians. No, 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 don't look. It didn't matter that Trump was actually tough on Russia, levied heavy sanctions, and basically damaged Russia, their economy, and their ability, and their position as a regional power. Right? It doesn't matter. They were all saying he was somehow Putin's bitch. And then Biden gets into office, undoes a lot of those sanctions, pretty much rolls over and gives them everything that they want. And Biden, he is a leader. He is holding Russia accountable by giving them everything that they want. I don't know. But in this article, it talks about how since Biden has been in office, we've seen cyber attacks on our oil and meat supply. Even transportation to Martha's Vineyard was hit. Gas and meat prices have been driven up as a result of the cyber attack, as well as some inflation. But so far, Biden has refused to tag Russia with the actions. And it's gone even further, where the cyber attacks have even gone through and targeted Congress. At least 60 members of Congress on both sides of the aisle have been unable to access constituent data for weeks because of a ransomware attack. So now they're targeting Congress, our elected leaders, our, well, supposedly elected leaders, targeting Congress, locking them out of their computer and locking them out of some data and holding it for ransom. You know, we know what ransomware is. It's where somehow, you know, through a download or something, you download a virus onto the computer that pretty much just locks up your computer so that you are unable to use it until you transmit a payment for them to unlock. And so that's what's going on with the ransomware attack. And we are seeing these attacks growing in number as the people engaged in the attacks know that Biden and the Democrats won't do anything because anything that that is an attack on the United States is celebrated by Biden and the Democrats. It's really just disgusting how much the Democrats hate this country and seeks to destroy it in order to turn the United States into the next Soviet Union, to turn the United States into the next Nazi Germany, which is the left's ultimate goal. And why is it that they justify this? Oh, racism, of course. America must be destroyed because of racism. Well, who was the one engaged in racism? Oh, the Democrats. It's sickening. And of course, the Democrats are doing everything they can to bring back racism in full force, all the way to segregation. And they have engaged in this, that they have created such hateful, racist people. And as we see here, as reported by the Daily Wire, a psychiatrist tells an audience at Yale that her fantasy is unloading a revolver into the heads of any white person that gets in their way. Oh, yes, that their fantasy is genocide against anybody, murder, genocide against anybody with white skin who doesn't just roll over and say, hey, do whatever you want. You know, to hell with the Constitution, to violate my rights all you want, you know, go for it. Unloading of a revolver into the heads of people on the basis of their skin color? And they're wanting to say that they're the anti-racist? Now, of course, they'll come out and say, well, you know, we are minorities here, you know, and therefore we can't be racist. Nothing we say is racist because racism is not based off of actions or words. It's based off of skin color. So if you have one skin color, everything you do is just automatically racist. If you have another skin color, nothing you do can be labeled as racist. And so it's okay for the left to go out there, promote violence, terrorism, and even up to genocide. It's okay because it's all in the name of anti-racism. That the best way to be anti-racist is to be full-bore racist. Again, the left wing's logic here is, well, undecipherable because there is no logic here. They are angry, hateful people. They are angry, hateful, racist, genocidal maniac on the left. Just like all other authoritarians in history, just like Hitler, just like Mao, they're hateful, genocidal maniac. And they want to act like they're the smart, reasonable academics. They're self-delusional. We have the crazies running the insane asylum in certain areas. Man. And so the only way that I can see of a person supporting a Democrat in today's age, you know, or even in the last 10 years, the only people who can support Democrats are angry, hateful, racist, genocidal maniacs. You cannot support the Democrat Party and still claim to have any decency to you whatsoever. And no, I will never apologize for that statement. Because I believe that very much when you look at the Democrats, what they say, what they do, their actions and their words make it very clear that you cannot support them and be a good person. That if you support them, you yourself are no different than the people who supported Hitler, than the people who supported Mao. You are no different from them because you are supporting angry, hateful, genocidal maniacs because deep down, you must be angry, racist, genocidal maniac. Okay, so there's one last thing that I want to get to today, and I'm going to leave this on a positive note. And this is something that I'm going to say, hey, good for the FBI. You know, when they're engaged in things that are not involved in politics, they can do some good work. It's only when the Democrats are in charge and using the FBI as basically a political weapon that we get all the problems, especially with those at the top. But as you see here an article, you know, from The Blaze, hundreds arrested from more than a dozen countries and massive global organized crime sting. All right, so here is the basics here, and this is what's really funny. All right, so the operation, you know, which is referred to by multiple names, Iron Sign, Green Light, Trojan Shield, was jointly conceived by the FBI and the Australian police back in 2018, so back during the Trump administration. And what they did is they came up with the idea where they created an app for a phone and a phone itself. And they promoted it on the open market to criminals as these are encrypted. These are heavily encrypted phones. This is an encrypted app that provides for total privacy. You know, that no one will be able to monitor the communications on these phones or on phones with these apps on here. It's encryption. And they sold them to criminals around the world, right? So now, of course, the criminals didn't know who was actually behind the phones and the apps. They were just hearing the marketing, hey, you know, secure encrypted communication. Don't let law enforcement be able to eavesdrop on you. And they went out there and they bought them. Of course, these were not encrypted phones. The apps were not encrypted. In fact, the phones and the apps were designed to make it even easier for law enforcement to access their data, to monitor all of their communications. It was really quite good. It took the criminals' desire for secure, encrypted, and safe communication and used that to give them communication systems that gave law enforcement full access to everything that they were saying, doing, and communicating. Okay, and so the app was then sold to organized criminals officials unbeknownst to them that they were being monitored. Those crime officials then distributed the phones containing the apps to their associates, believing the phones to be secured. The Guardian reported. Over the next 2 years, law enforcement in more than 100 countries were able to monitor the internal communications of more than 300 criminal groups, including plans for drug smuggling, money laundering, and even murder. Then, according to Europol earlier this week, since 16 countries conducted raids based on the evidence gathered, leading to more than 800 arrests in at least 18 countries across the globe. Tons of drugs, cryptocurrencies, luxury cars, and weapons were also seized in the raids, along with $148 million in cash. So yes, this is a great story. This is, you know, going off and using the trend of the perception of secure encrypted communication phones, using that and the criminals' desire for that against them, so that you could pretty much install bugs in everybody. I mean, you were talking about phones and all of that, where the law enforcement was able to access the cameras and the microphones without the knowledge of the criminal, so that they could hear and see what was going on, who was involved, as well as listen in on every phone conversation and every text message. Oh, it was great. Great, great, great. Kudos to the FBI on this one. All right. So that's it for today's episode. Remember, there's not going to be an episode tomorrow or on Friday. All right, so I will be back next week with another episode. All right, so if this is your first time listening in, don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss another episode. Leave me a rating and a review, and go ahead and share this on all social media platforms. Let other people know about the show. All right, thank you so much, and I will be back again soon.